and welcome to episode 8 of the Road to Change podcast, the 10,000 mile walk to stop the silence and stop child sexual abuse. My name is Matty McBarish, and I'm here in Bucharest with Elstigo MacGyver.
Elstigo, I'm here. Nice to meet you again.
And Manny Bobs is here. She's in the city, but she is staying at the other side of the city. So we're just going to do a quick intro, because this week in Bucharest, Road to Change had two incredible guests, which has been wonderful. So if you haven't heard them already, we had Granny Wendy and Auntie Janet. They flew all the way from Fife to join us here in Bucharest. So besides the usual activities that we've been doing, which is reaching out to press and media, we've met Road to Change met three incredible NGOs this week who work in child protection, and we also met the Romanian government. But as well as all that, we've been hanging out with these lovely ladies who are supporters of Road to Change, and they did an incredible fundraiser last week in Fife, which was so gorgeous to watch.
Surprising, yeah.
I mean, there was just like the whole family, the whole community, and Road to Change t-shirts, raising money and awareness for child sexual abuse prevention. So yeah, so what we did was, whilst they were here, we did a wee interview with them, and they're sadly already back home in Edinburgh. Well, Edinburgh. They flew home to Edinburgh last night. They're back home in Fife tonight. So what we'll do is we'll let you hear the chat we had with them, and we'll see you guys after this. So here I am in a hotel in Bucharest, and I'm with the lovely Granny Wendy.
Hello.
And her gorgeous sister, Janet.
Hello.
And these lovely ladies have flown all the way from Scotland just to support the Road to Change here in Romania. So we're so grateful that you're here. And it's surreal for me that you guys are here, because obviously I haven't seen a Scottish person in about 10 months. Also, the Road to Change for me at the moment, and pretty much since I started in London, and I've been in all these beautiful countries, but they're all so foreign and strange to me. But the Road to Change is an awareness project across Europe, and it means so much to me that you guys have got involved in Scotland, but after it started. And so you guys are a big supporter of the Road to Change, and so that's maybe my first question for you, Wendy. What attracted you to become a supporter of Road to Change?
I read about it in the paper after finding out last year at this time that my husband had sexually abused two of my girls and my niece and two of my grandkids. And shortly after that, and dealing with that, I read your article in the Daily Record or the Sunday Mail, one of them, and it was with Libby MacArthur.
Uh-huh.
When you were setting off on your journey. So it was a wee bit after, about a few weeks after it had all affected myself. And it was just nice to read the information that, you know, there's someone out there trying to do something about it. And
so it was really, really divine timing. I mean, that situation just came to light in your family.
Yeah.
And this was, I remember Libby MacArthur, who's River City Star and also a columnist, I think, in one of the major Scottish papers. She came all the way down to London to do the First Mile event with me, which was last May. So nearly a year ago, about 10 months ago.
Yeah.
And you were saying you saw the article about Road to Change, which had just started, and then what did you do from there?
Well, looked it all up on like the internet and things like that, and also in the paper it had mentioned the Moira Anderson Foundation. So I was struggling a bit myself just to comprehend everything that was going on. So I had actually got in touch with them, and I've been receiving help for them.
The Moira Anderson Foundation.
For them. So it's good for anybody out there that's going through similar situations, if, you know, things you're getting the media coverage, and it just proves that this helps people and gives people a bit of hope.
And it's so heartwarming to hear that, you know, you guys were in that situation, which was quite a new situation that you were in. And that the article that you read was one of the very first Road to Change articles in any newspaper. And thankfully they put the information about the Moira Anderson Foundation, who's one of the major partners on Road to Change. So, I mean, yeah, if you're listening to this in Scotland and you want to speak to someone about a situation with child sexual abuse, the Moira Anderson Foundation link is on our website, roadtochange.eu, and they've got services for adults and children, play therapy for kids. They can give you legal advice. They're an incredible, incredible resource for anyone in Scotland. But if you're listening from another country, then you can still get in touch if it's a country that I've been to, then perhaps I'll be able to put you in touch with an NGO there that does the same kind of services. But so you guys have had quite a couple of years really with dealing with this situation. And Janet, how would you like to see what happened in your with you guys after this all came to light?
To see happen now as we have to learn our children.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully even if we learn our children, and like we're speaking about grandchildren, they're obviously my great nieces, nephews, there's a big family of us, Ken, all over the world, in fact, is. And if we can learn our children and learn them, it's all about these passwords and speak openly about their body parts and things like that, and that they're theirs and nobody has rights. We hope that our children can even pass that to their friends, and then their friends pass it to them. But then also, as the thing we came across, that obviously, not specifically about our community, but it's come to light in all small communities, is that there is a stigma that, no, you didn't speak about these things, and you don't this, and you don't that, and it's, we have to get out to these smaller communities, we have to raise awareness, which will then thingy prevention, and educate, and even educate the adults on how to come to terms with what's happened, or and the fact is, if you educate the adults, they will pass it on to their kids. It's a big circle of things that affect your life when this sex abuse comes into life, again into your life. It affects everybody, friends, family, everybody around about you.
Everyone. The devastation is just so
devastation,
far away.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's the actions of one person, one perpetrator, that affects. I mean, in you guys' case, it's you know, nearly hundreds of people that are in the community that are actually, you know, are still kind of dealing with this in their own way, kind of thing. It's hard to explain to someone who's never experienced anything like it just how many lives it affects.
Mm-hmm.
And that one person's actions, it's just the ramifications that go on for generations and that go out into so many different directions. So Wendy, I mean, your situation, there must be millions of people around the world who have been through what you've been through, with your actual partner being an offender and the victims being within your own family. And so, I mean, one of the things that I've experienced is people asking me questions like, you know, how come your mum and dad didn't notice it was happening? Because my uncle abused me for, you know, nearly a decade, quite regularly. So, you know, people who don't understand these things can't understand how nobody ever noticed. So, I mean, what would you say to people who ask things like that was going on in your house and you know, for so long and you didn't know?
It's questions you ask yourself every day. And you can understand why people feel like that, because you ask yourself those questions. Why did you know, see what was going on? Or, you know, you should have seen what was going on. And it's, I think that's the hardest part, is dealing with knowing that you never seen what was going on. But obviously, that's what the people do.
They're master manipulators, groom the
children, basically, and
but so they groom the children, and but they groom, like with my uncle, he groomed the entire family.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh, definitely.
You know, and you don't see that until, like, uh-huh, you say it, when you look back and things make sense,
yeah,
retrospectively, you know.
When I look back now and see some of the things, it all makes sense now, but at the time it didn't.
Yeah.
You know, when it's all happening in your life, you don't think nothing of it. But now looking back, yeah, there was signs there.
Mm-hmm.
But then when people ask me questions like that, how could you not have seen it? I can't answer something that I really don't know myself. Because
mm-hmm.
I ask myself that and I can't really answer.
It's the worst thing to think about somebody, and especially if it's somebody within your own family.
Uh-huh.
And 40% of all childhood sexual abuse is within the family. It's some sort of incestual situation. So this is extremely common. Do you know what I mean? It's massively common. But not as more common than people actually can even comprehend, like you say. And like, you guys, what would you describe your, like, fife? If someone listens to this from Denmark, has never heard of fife, What's that like? You know, what's that area? Is it Fife or Kirkcaldy? Would you
Fife.
It's a very small community where basically everyone knows everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so the problem we faced was it was hard for people because the person in our case was very popular and very well known and very well liked in our community. It was very hard for people to comprehend that he was capable of such actions. So we sort of were on the backlash. It was quite negative support that we got from the community, because people don't want to believe that people are capable of these things. So I think that what we're trying to do now is just raise awareness where people can realise that this does happen, and it does happen in small communities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it could be your next door neighbour, someone you meet going to the shop every day, buying a paper. You just never know who's capable.
And they're very clever people. I'll give, it sounds thingy to say that, but predators are very, very clever people. Because as well as grooming who they're abusing, or the family round about them, you've got your answer in itself is they're capable of grooming everybody in a way.
Oh, the entire community.
Controlling.
Yeah.
And we only see it now after what we've been through and things, as they can control a lot of people.
Yeah. And it's so subtle, it's almost just invisible, their behaviour.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So just to explain to the people listening, first of all, you had to deal with realising that happened within your own family. And then when it came to light, the community's reaction to that wasn't the one you'd hoped for, which is, you know, everyone being kind of bereft on your behalf and supportive. It was the opposite of that. So do you want to say a bit about that?
What had happened is when, it's basically it's a year ago this weekend that it all came out, and we had to deal with the Child Protection Unit and go through all the stages, giving statements and the girls and things like that. But that went on for about 8 weeks before my husband was lifted and charged with the police with the offences of abusing the
historical abuse,
on the three older girls, but he was still being investigated for sexual abuse and to the grandchildren. And on the Friday that he was lifted and charged with the three older girls, the following Monday, 2 days later, he was actually found dead in our house.
And he was found dead. What do you think killed him, or is that official information? Or?
Yeah, it's official. Now, at the time it came back, it was unascertained. We didn't know. So, but since then, from a coroner's report, it said that it was tramadol, morphine, and ecstasy.
Yes.
So. That's basically what they put on it. So everybody has their own thoughts on that, and we have ours as well. But officially, that's what he died.
Why he took his life.
And that was at the end of May, and that's when you, your wee hero, come into your life and showed us that there's people out there that will help you get through it. And it's just been a journey.
You have been on quite a journey in the past year, and the things that you're telling me, I'm sure. When you're going through that, you must have felt like the only people in the world that ever had to have the situation. But I'm sure, if a child is abused every 30 seconds, there's millions of offenders in the world, and many of them are married, and many of them have families. And so I'm really, really pleased that you're here and you're talking about these things in a public forum, because there's so many people out there who probably feel very alone, and they're probably in similar situations to yourselves, you know. When it has been a family member or even a partner who's turned out to be the offender, or somebody who's talked about their history of abuse within themselves and the community hasn't been even believed anything they've said, you know.
I think it's because it never went to court. He got charged with the offences and was due to appear in court in the next month, and obviously we never got anything in court. And then so you sort of felt
you felt cheated, he even controlled that bit.
Yeah, he took his own life, so he never faced the mm-hmm. what the court system, so it was never dealt with.
And I think because, obviously, when you're going through the situation where you're given, like, dealing with the Child Protection Unit, when they're taking a case like that on, they advise you basically not even to speak to each other about the situation because they don't want you tripping up, or, you know, they want you to be clear in your head about the things that you're telling them, so they don't want you speaking about it so that you're maybe picking up on what someone else is mm-hmm. saying, so mm-hmm. that you're clear about the information that you're giving them. So we were advised not even to discuss anything with each other,
mm-hmm.
and we never discussed it with anybody else within the community as well. And so then when he was charged and then died 2 days later, and then it came out he'd been charged with it, but then people felt sorry because he had died.
Yeah.
So it turned that away.
Taking that away for the victims their day in court, you know.
Yeah. We never once asked anybody to believe us, but we did ask was give us a bit of understanding of what we're going through, and not to judge on things that they didn't know about.
Mm.
And that was the hard bit. We never at any time asked anybody to believe us, but give us respect to try and get through this.
Mm.
And we had, and it's hard to believe that even when we got word that he had died, people still even then didn't have the concept that we, in a way, it was part of your lives all the years. You were still, like, felt sorry or hurting that he had passed away.
Of course, you
were going through a really big emotional thing, and people just thought you were heartless and things, and didn't realise that you were maybe sitting in the house with your own thoughts thinking, we never ever wanted that to happen. There was other people involved on another side of your family that you didn't want that devastation for them,
mm-hmm.
that they didn't have that person in their life. And people just didn't understand that you can have their feelings as well. Okay? And they just thought, oh, you'll be glad he's not hearing that. No. Yeah. And it wasn't all today about with getting the court day or that. We just didn't want other children that were involved. And again, that were innocent in it all to that as well. We're parents, we're aunties, we're uncles. We have feelings, and we could understand how they would be feeling that it passed there. But nobody seemed to hear the concept that we would be hurting as well, that he had passed, eh? And it was hard for us even to sit and think, well, why should we feel sorry that he's passed? But in reality, we all did.
I think that's where education comes in, and that's the full aim, is educating people about child sexual abuse and, you know,
the aftermath of it and what you've got to deal with.
And so I think that's the biggest thing, is the ignorance that it faces, because people don't understand it, then it's hard for them to perceive, you know, how
prevalent it is
and
what the effects are. I mean, mm-hmm. it's more prevalent than anyone even wants to believe, but it is there, and it's in every street, like you say. It's mm-hmm. you know,
when you have your daughter screaming, because it's like flashbacks to them to start with. And they can have these flashbacks, and you know the bit of flashback that they kind of piece together, but you could for them, because you actually know what they're talking about, but you can't say that's right, and it was this, because as Wendy said earlier, it couldn't be your words, at that time we thought it was going to court, was, no, that's not right, because my mum says it, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the full kit, Ken. Mm-hmm. And that's so hard not to be able to put your arms around your daughter and say, what you're saying is right, and it is right, and it wasn't that, it was that, what you're thinking, because you kind of get one thing, you're thinking, no, it wasn't that, it was this, and you know what the this was, and you couldn't put your arms around and say to her, you're right, you're no dreaming, and it was... To hear your daughter saying, I think I'm just dreaming. I'm dreaming it, but it wasn't it. It was all these memories fuzzing up their head. See, it was.
It's so hard when the legal. Of course, these things need to go through a legal process mm-hmm. so that we can, you know, so these people can be removed from contact with children. But the legal processes are so rigid, and they have to be because, you know, like the victim's word has to be recorded. And in Britain, we have a thing where if you go and see a therapist because you're suffering as psychologically suffering from having been abused, the therapist can make a report, and that's used in court. But actually, in places like the Netherlands, when I was there, they actually have the opposite. If a victim speaks to a therapist, then they can't press charges because the legal system will say, well, that therapist has entertained these delusions and made them worse. And so, like, it's such a... Of course, these are really new... In the history of humanity, these are not new situations, but in the history of any legal system, it's only in the past couple of decades that legislation's been drawn up and procedures have been put together to actually deal with it. And we're not quite there yet. I mean, we're way further ahead in Scotland than with these systems than we are in perhaps where we're sitting now in Romania. But, you know, we still have such a long way to go into learning how to deal with these things. But it's just so hard for you guys, for the families, for when you're going through that process. And because obviously it's I mean, I'm walking around Europe trying to get everybody to talk about it, but it's a horrible thing to talk about. But it's not going to go away if we don't talk about it. So we have to go through it, you know.
Now that's how we feel of it. If you don't talk about it and you don't make people aware that we speak about things and you think, well, cancer, TB things, people didn't speak about that years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But now they do, and it can come into everyday conversation and nobody feels that there's a stigma stuck to it. And we hope one day that there's something like that about sex abuse.
Absolutely.
Because until then, it'll never ever go away.
No.
It'll never go away and it'll keep happening until it's an open thing. And we come up, we've done a fundraiser for yourself recently.
It was amazing. I'm so moved by it when I saw the pictures.
And we got our sweatshirts, our hoodies, our t-shirts. And, well, some people thought it was a bad thing on the grounds that our children were involved. But we... Mm-hmm. Our children range from 2-year-olds up to, well, the 27-year-olds and things, eh? But we've got teenagers, 13, 14-year-olds, who we have sat down, we have explained things. They didn't go on the walk because they were forced to go on the walk. They were actually given the choice. Did they want to go on the walk and things? And then you have the young ones at 2 and 3, mm-hmm. and people are saying, oh, imagine putting a sweatshirt on them like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they can have their opinions, but our opinion in that is, well, they 2 and 3 year olds need to start getting educated.
Exactly.
Because once you start educating them at that age,
yeah.
then they are then free to talk about things. They learn that their body parts are theirs
yeah.
and nobody and things can take that away from them. So we actually feel, and it might sound thingy to some people, but we actually feel proud that we've got 2 and 3 year olds and we hope they 2 and 3 year olds are going to grow up with us, that it's not a bad thing to speak about and things like that.
Absolutely.
And that will pass to their friends.
Yeah.
And their friends pass it on.
Exactly.
And that,
I mean, saying the words is not abuse.
No.
You know, saying the words child sexual abuse is not abuse.
No, no.
You know, and if someone explained to me when I was 2 or 3 years old what it was,
mm-hmm.
then maybe my life would have been completely different.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was, you know, my uncle probably started abusing me in the kind of late 80s when I was that way. And I had no concept of what he was doing. It took me literally decades to come to terms with what
mm-hmm.
he was doing because people had never explained to me that these things happen. So it's you know, it's not harming the wounds, giving them the tools to speak out about it when it happens.
It's all about changing and changing attitudes. Like, I can remember when maybe I was 13, 14-year-old and you'd be sitting watching a TV programme and somebody, a couple would come on kissing and that was it. Dad would go up and say, right, that's it, time for you to go to bed and turn the TV off.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was like, you didn't speak about things kind of like that.
Anything sexual. Aye. Yeah.
But now, we're at a thing and times do change, as my 13 and 14-year-olds can sit and watch it. And it could actually... You have all situations on the TV now, like the gay thing and things like that. And we could speak openly about all the kind of sort of things now. And you hope that your kids don't grow up having an attitude against things like that. Things like that happen, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And it is. It's all about awareness.
Education,
which will then lead to prevention, and
exactly
that is what we've thingied on it all. Eh? And it's not we've come to a situation. Yeah, we're going through what we're going through, and that. But it's not all about us anymore. It's about help mothers.
Yeah.
But because of the pain and things we've been through, we maybe could help people. We can help raise awareness and educate things and bring things into the, not just our community, but work towards doing it in other small communities and doing it all as part of Road to Change when you come back to Scotland. And you've walked all over Europe and
well,
things like that.
Well, it finishes in Edinburgh, so this is the last country I reach. Yeah.
But Road to Change, and to me, is a road to change for life.
Exactly.
For all over the world.
It's not just the 10,000 miles, mm-hmm. that's the kind of get the ball rolling, and then it continues, you know. So, I mean, I'm so moved by your support, and I'm so moved by your story as well, but and I'm so chuffed that you've flown all this way to Romania. So I could have waited till I got back to Edinburgh, and it costs you half as much. But and he's did that fundraiser, and it was just the photos were gorgeous of all the Waynes and all the family and all the community, just walking for, you know, like I say, when I saw the logo on your hoodies and those words, and for me it's I get really excited when I see it in a kind of strange way, because I've in so many situations been told not to put it on things, and don't you know, like I was advised when I was trying to get funding, if you take the words child sexual abuse away, then you'll probably get more funding because people don't want to see these words. And I'm like, well, you can't see the words, how do you raise awareness about something you can't talk about? What's the point? But
if you go under the other things like child protection, it involves a lot of things. Mm. And that, but the thing
could be
that,
emotional abuse, neglect, all those things.
The part of the road to change, it's sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't say that it's sexual abuse, it's pointless.
Exactly, and that's what we're trying to do. So, as I say, well, it's been great speaking to you, and I mean, there's a million more things we could talk about, but I think, is there a final thing that you would like to say to people, like, because you had a really difficult situation, I mean, one of the most difficult situations to deal with within your families, and you did that step of breaking the silence and going ahead and talking about it, and then doing the next step of using your trauma to try and help others heal and help others reach the next step in their journey to recovery. So what would your advice be for anyone out there who's still, you know, they've maybe got a situation within the family and they just don't want to, they just want to close the door and forget about it? What would you say to them?
I would say to them to speak out, and even go and speak with someone, because you have to deal with it. And they might think that, because obviously that nobody's going to believe them and things like that, but people will believe them, and you know, there's always people out there that's going to help you. There is help there, and this is all what we're trying to do, is raise awareness so that people don't feel secluded and that they can't speak about it. And you know, so I would advise them definitely to speak out. I'm glad my daughter spoke out, and well, it was my wee grandson that brought it all to light. So if it wasn't for that, I could have been living more of my life a lie, and God knows what would have happened, you know, in the future. So for me personally, I'm, you know, it's bad enough what has happened, but it still could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
It could have been a lot worse. So I would definitely say, if they've got the courage to speak out, then speak out about it. Yeah.
Go for it.
Definitely.
It's a new that it came out, as we've learned about how the girls, mainly the older girls, because they are the ones that have kept it bottled up for years. And looking back, and you see things that they've done or things and that, and you realise how much they've bottled them up. And if you're thinking about no speaking out, you never know when that is going to come out. And the longer that, I feel that if you keep it in, and we can see it with the different ages of the girls and that, so some are maybe 10 more years than the other one. And when it does, it'll haunt you all your life. So you have to get it out, or it's ruling. Mm. And that's that person that done it to you is still controlling your life.
Absolutely. Well, ladies, I think yous are smashing. I'm so moved that yous are here, and I love yous to bits. So thank you so much for flying out here and sharing your story. And you've still got a couple more days in Bucharest. Are you having fun in Bucharest?
Yes.
When we're putting out the podcast, we'll chat a bit. Me and Stig and I will chat a bit about what we've been doing with Road to Change here this week. But I just wanted to, whilst you were here, take the opportunity to speak to yous and thank you for being here and sharing your story.
Well, it's been good for us as well, as you like when you put up your podcasts and you put up your blogs and things like that, is we can read them and we're reading about all your walks and things like that. But for us as well, to come here and meet you and Stig and Amanda and actually see how you actually live while she's doing it, and nothing could have prepared us for Yvonne. Good old Yvonne.
Good, God bless Yvonne.
But it's given us a bit more insight as well, and to use as people.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll take and believe it or not, we'll take away a lot of good to that as well, getting to know you personally.
Bless you. I invite any support road to change to fly out here and hang out for a couple of days. You know, it's great an experience. But yeah, thanks so much, guys. We'll see
you
soon.
You're welcome.
So welcome back. That, as you heard, was Granny Wendy and Auntie Janet. And yeah, we missed them already. It was incredible having them here.
It was lovely. Yeah.
And I have to say, it was so amazing. I found it so moving that that I had never met them before, and they heard about the Road to Change pretty much the week it started in the British press when I was leaving London. But they've been, obviously we've been in touch on Facebook, and I watched the event kind of grow that they held last week, and it was, yeah, it was kind of, it was a lovely kind of surreal to have them join us here, because their voices for me are so, they make me feel so at home. Mm-hmm. But Bucharest is literally the furthest east that I'll walk in the whole Road to Change. So to be the furthest from home and have these two lovely ladies constantly reminded me of home. It was quite a nice week in a lovely weird way. So Stiggle, you doing, Stiggle? You're looking really well.
I'm really good.
You want to see the sun, the effect it has on a Scandinavian. Yeah. It totally changes them.
Yeah. We started to work out, and both you and I have gained some. You can see some changes.
So. It's physical changes, yes. Yeah. Stego and I have been a bit health conscious. I mean, obviously, I've been doing the whole walk anyway. So people are screaming at me. Actually, in the past 2 days, I've been contacted by 6 people who genuinely are alarmed of how skinny I'm getting, and they've all 6 people, unrelated to each other, have got in touch and said, "Look, you really need to eat more." And I'm just like, there's nothing to panic about, people. Honestly, I eat a serious amount of food. But also, you know, generally I walk over 30 miles a day, so it's just what happens physically. But so don't worry about that, folks. Tomorrow I start walking to Bulgaria.
Yeah.
But after 3 days of walking, I'm going to come back to Bucharest in an unprecedented move, because my big brother Roddy is flying into Bucharest, and he's going to join me on the walk to Sofia, and I'm so proud of him for coming out here, and it's going to be so exciting and to get on the road with him. And Stigwood, you've not met Roddy yet.
No, I haven't met. I don't think. I might have heard him on the phone once or something. But
yeah.
Other than that,
well, you hopefully hear him saying hello on the podcast next week. But it's been a mental busy week.
Okay.
Tonight we're heading to a screening of To Kill a Kelpie in Bucharest at Klaka at 8 p.m. And that's Klaka is an arts venue here in Bucharest, and there's going to be loads of hopefully press, but also artists and theatre makers and directors and public here from Romania coming to see the film, which is an adaptation of the play that I wrote based on the experience I had with my uncle when I was a child and the experiences growing up being a survivor. So that should be fun. And then tomorrow we get on the road again.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
But
we need to sort Yvonne again, but
we do. We always need to sort Yvonne out. She just needs to put it on.
She was perfect. She was spotless and immaculate before we arrived in Bucharest.
Yeah, Mojo had her absolutely spotless, and then he left, and we broke her again.
Yeah, that's what you get when you take all your stuff into an apartment or something.
Well, it's like that expression, living out of suitcases. We don't have suitcases; we have plastic bags,
and they rip.
Yeah. So between Yvonne and moving into wherever we're going to be for the week, everything falls apart and lies on the street. So but I'm going to, I'm actually going to invest in some underwear because
I need to do that too.
So I don't own any.
I think I've did the laundry and I found two pairs.
That's good. Well, I'm 31 and I have 2 pairs of pants. Who needs pants? You have a kilt.
Yeah.
But, yes. So this week we have a nail luck of the week, which actually goes to Granny Wendy.
not Janet.
And Aunt yeah. Janet, because we wanted to show them Romania. They saw Bucharest, and Bucharest is beautiful and quite an unusual city. And I think they had a lot of fun here. But we wanted to show them the mountains. So what day was it? Thursday?
Day's a day.
Yeah, it was Thursday. Yeah, because today's Saturday. So we took them in a van, and people on Facebook were freaking out because they saw me in a van. But, you know, once I've walked to the centre of the city, I moved around in a van and stuff. So I'll be walking from the centre of Bucharest to the centre of Sofia. Don't anyone panic. So, yeah, so we drove in a van to the countryside, and we drove for about 2 hours to try and reach a mountain. And we found the beginning of the mountains, pretty much. Mm. And then we got out, and we walked up a hill. And
there's a lot of bushes and
a lot of thorns, yeah. And the poor wee legs got all cut up with the bushes. And then we got to the top of the hill, and you couldn't really see anything. And then it was, by that time, it was dark. So we climbed back down the hill again, and we went home. So no luck. I mean, we're trying to show you the beauteous mountains that I'd been walking through, but they were another kind of 20 kilometers. But by the time we actually finally got there. It was dark. The only reason we were so late is because we'd gone for that meal.
That was just, gosh. Yeah, I ordered some meatballs drowned in tomato sauce.
And what did you get?
I got stuffed cabbage.
Yeah, you ordered meatballs, which is a Swedish thing.
Yeah, and you got. And I know what meatballs looks like.
Yeah, Stego knows a meatball when he sees one.
Yeah, and she came out with the waitress came out with the meatballs, according to her. So I said, "This is not meatballs." She was like, "Yeah, it is."
Yes, that's meatballs.
That's meatballs. I asked, "Are you sure this is meatballs?" Yes. All right. So then she went away, and I started to try a bite of them. It was not meatballs, and it was tomato cabbage. Sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
And then,
but
then Janet went on a rampage there and got some meatballs. But it turned out
she got your meatball, and it wasn't really worth the 3 hour wait.
It was fun. We had some lovely company.
Well, me and Granny Wendy eventually got a salad.
Oh yeah, you got
eventually.
Yeah, you wanted tuna salad, and you got chicken salad first, and then
This Neiluk story is banal as it sounds. It was basically a kind of meandering afternoon trying to get a lunch, and it just ended up a hoo ha. But sometimes you have to remember that we're literally in Eastern Europe. We're not in.
Yeah.
We're not in Kansas anymore, folks. Anyway, so thank you so much to Granny Wendy and to Janik for coming all this way and for everything you guys have done and to reaching out for your community and telling them about Road to Change. And I mean, there's just so many ways you have supported us. It's hard to express our gratitude for all of them, really. Thank you so much for the t-shirts. Stego's already had his name printed on the t-shirt you left him.
Yep.
And you'll see him in pictures wearing that the rest of the summer.
Yeah, I sent a picture to both of them just now.
Well, have you done it already? Yeah. Okay. Well, folks, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. As you know, the Road to Change is a project organised and supported by Stop the Silence, Stop Child Sexual Abuse, in partnership with the Moira Anderson Foundation. If you want more information on what we're doing over here, go to roadtochange.eu, and we have no official corporate support. So if you'd like to support us financially, there's a big donate button there, and you can give us a few quid, and it goes directly towards our efforts here to raise awareness for prevention and healing of child sexual abuse across the EU. So there's 100 million victims or survivors in Europe, and many, many of them are not in a position to get the help that they deserve. So let's help change things, folks.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts, Stego?
No, it will be fun to meet Roddy.
I hope you're listening to this, Roddy. We can't wait for you to get here. Yeah. And you brought some best of Sofia,
off to Sofia, it's going to be quite nice to walk down the coast of Greece. I can't wait to do that.
Yeah. From now on, it's going to be pretty beautiful, but pretty warm.
It's not warm enough. Still. I could have another 20 degrees.
No, I'm Scottish. This is plenty. Right, thank you so much for listening, guys. All we'll speak to you next week.
Cheers.